Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 28 with Belgian breeder Isabel Van Eekhout of Stal Dieve. This is a person that I've been curious and interested to meet and to visit for quite some time now. And this week, I finally got the opportunity to do so. And I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was that was drawing me there initially. But it didn't take long for me to realize that this was someone very special. And it's been quite some time since I met someone, a breeder or otherwise, who had such passion, such feeling, and such a connection with her horses, and where there was so much emotion involved in every part of what Isabel does there. She is someone who definitely goes her own way and really lives for and loves her horses. And all this is clear from the very beginning of this episode, right through to her final words. And this is an interview that I know myself I'm going to be listening to over and over again. So, the farm was originally a cow farm.
Yep.
But at some point you decided to make a change and go completely into horses. When was that, and what motivated you to do that?
I like being outside, being with animals, and my father had cows, but I couldn't bury the idea that they were bred to kill. And I eat meat, I like meat, but it was very difficult for me to raise these babies and then I had to put it down to the slaughter. No. I didn't want to do that. That's not for me. And I was crazy about horses from when I was very little, like a bit obsessed, I think. And I think when I was 18, I needed to decide if I went to university or not. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I wanna live my life with horses. And sometimes later on you think like maybe should have think a bit better, but I don't regret it at all. I love being outside. I love being around horses. I love the babies.
Where did that come from? Were your parents interested in?
My father had cows. My father was born in 1930, so there were no cars, nothing of technology. So he worked with the heavy horses, yeah, on the land, and I think it came from there. I assume because nobody else in the family was passionate about horses. Nobody.
When you made that decision, did you start breeding straight away?
I started breeding already a bit earlier.
Okay,
but there were, how would you say, my father had a trotter, yeah, how you call it? A trotter, and he bred with a normal riding horse, and then we had a baby. But when I was about 14, I was in school, and somebody, a guy who was with me in class, he said, oh, we are riding there, you have to come there. I said, okay, I will try. I came there, and it was at Félicien de Brouwer's place. And he was like an encyclopedia about Holsteiner horses. And I was like, totally intrigued. I was like, oh my God, what is this? I need to learn more about this. I started buying books, and I was, you know, like crazy, and oh, and this horse did that, and this mother, I was crazy, totally crazy. And then I decided, because of this man, that I wanted to become a horse breeder. And we sold all the, how you say, the normal horses, and I bought one brood mare. And I said, okay, this is the beginning, and we'll see where we get. And I was trying to improve every time, and I wanted to have a Landgraf, I wanted to have a Granus, I wanted to have an Almé, and I wanted to have a Furioso too. And
it good taste.
Yeah, and eventually I had it all, and I know the time we bought the Almé, I was jumping in the air like, hi, I have an Almé, it's crazy, but it's like that. And that's where it started. About this man, it started my passion for breeding.
And from those mares that you bought originally, which of those are you still breeding from those lines?
I'm still breeding with the Landgraf line. The Almé, the last one I had died, and I didn't have a filly from her, so it stopped. The Granus was not good enough, so we stopped with her. And the Furioso too, she had an accident, pregnant from Kidam de Revel. She broke a leg, and yeah, dream was over with her.
Yeah.
But I still have the Landgraf line.
And for those that aren't familiar with your breeding program, will you just give a little bit of idea, and typically in a normal year, how many foals would you have? And then what's usually the plan then once you have those foals? Like, how do you decide when to sell?
That's a difficult question. We have about 6 to 8 foals, but sometimes it's a bit too much, but you know, you start and then one is more pregnant than you thought, but okay. And I always try to keep the fillies, but if you have a lot of fillies, then you have to sell some fillies. And then, yeah, it starts which one. And it's not that you... People always think that you are selling the bad ones, but that's not true. You're just selling... Yeah, why? Because sometimes you have more a connection or something with one filly, and sometimes you have to choose. You have to choose, you have to say, okay. And once I choose, it's better not to say to me, like, but maybe you keep her, but then I say, yeah, yeah, we keep her. But it's a hard decision every time. It's a hard decision. Stallions are easier. It's easier, but sometimes I wish I had all the money in the world, then I would keep them. But unfortunately, I...
But do you think it would make you a better breeder?
It wouldn't make me a better breeder. No. No, I don't think so. A better breeder, no. But it would make it easier to... keep them and to give them all the chances in sport. But it wouldn't make me a better breeder. No. No, because sometimes I think having less foals makes you a better breeder than having too many foals. Because when you have too many, sometimes you don't do the things in the way you should do it. Sometimes it's better to have a little bit less, but to do it really good. I mean, in nutrition and everything around. Not really by producing them, but to keep them until they are 3, 4, 5, 6. It's better to do it in the right way than have too many and Sometimes you can do it better with less.
Yeah.
That's what I want to say.
And on the feeling and connection, what was really nice is when we took some time to look through the folds. There's, I suppose, by Belgian standards, it's a small number of folds.
Yeah.
Very small number of folds in comparison to a lot of the breeding programs that we'd see here. But in each stable, there is a genuine feeling and connection towards each of those mares and foals, and it was quite special to watch. And you can do it in the way that you want to do it. But for those that will be listening to this, will you talk to me about the foals and the process of those, of managing those mares and foals on a daily basis, and particularly touch on that study that you mentioned, because I think that was really interesting.
Yeah.
It's really got me thinking.
Yeah. So in the morning, they get fed. They all get fed. Then they go out in the field. I clean all the boxes. The foals I clean once a day because they come in at night. The other horses I clean twice a day. The horses who are still the sport horses, they have about 5 times food a day, and hay, always hay. And when they come in at night, yeah, it's time to cuddle. And they have a lot of straw, big boxes,
yeah.
Because, okay, they are in, but I want to have movement. I read an article about foals who were in the field, and they made a shed. And one was completely open. The other one was closed on, how you say, on tree sides.
Yeah.
And the other one was closed on tree sides. And then a little one on the fourth side. And they said, just they made a study, that the mares would go in the shed with 4 sides. And they wanted the foals to be in the corner where they were completely protected. And they said that they saw a difference between foals who were resting a lot, that the x-rays were better than the foals without shed or with open shed, because the foals were, they had a good rest, so they cannot have movement. Yeah, they have to move a lot, but they also have to need a good rest for the bones to, how you say it, to become strong.
Yeah. In terms of raising your young horses, are there any other parts of that process that you think you do differently to other breeders?
I think that as a woman, maybe it's because I'm a woman, I don't know, I have a lot of affection with my horses. I know from every horse that screams, I know which one it is. And sometimes people can like horses, but I love horses. And that's why I wanted to have a life with horses, because I love horses. Not because nowadays, sometimes I think they just want to make money with horses, but I just love the life with my horses. And I think that's sometimes a difference with big breeders. They have a lot of foals, and it's, yeah, it's this one out of this mare, but for me it is.
Yeah.
And for me it is like, yeah, that's out of my true star. My true star is my one of a lifetime horse. I love her so much. I love them. I love them all. And that makes it sometimes difficult to sell.
That's what I was thinking as you were saying that. I was wondering, how do you balance that with the commercial aspect? Because presumably
I'm a very bad seller. I know I have to sell because everybody needs money to continue, but I'm a bad seller. Every horse that leaves here, it's like, yeah, I cry every time. And I don't know how they do it, but they leave and they scream. And then I'm like, oh, no, 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 I'm totally gone. And I always say goodbye to every horse. I say, okay, I hope you will have a good life, you have a good owner, you have a good career, and I hope you're happy. And when then later on people, that's what I loved, not the most, but I like it so much when people who buy them here, afterwards they send me pictures and they're like, I love them so much that I'm happy. And I know that they came in a good place. It means more to me than that they would achieve everything but be unhappy. Sometimes it's hard. Most of the time it's hard.
And when you're selling, in those moments when you're selling them, does it ever make you want to stop breeding them?
No.
That's good.
No. No. I think breeding is something inside of you. It's a feeling. I'm always curious about how the foals will be. Once you're not curious anymore, I think you should stop breeding.
It's over.
Yeah, it's over. And every time you think, oh, will he be like I expected, or will he be different? And then they come out and they are like, yes, this is totally what I wanted. And then they're like, okay, no, this maybe should be a bit different. But once you lose this feeling, this love for the horse, you should stop breeding. When you do it only for the money, no, stop it then.
I know the man that you mentioned that started your interest in,
yep,
Holstein and the bloodlines. I know that's obviously been an incredibly influential moment. But since you started breeding, has there been any person in your life that has had a really, really significant impact on you as a breeder, or that kind of really taught you something special that has helped you or changed how you do things?
It's not a person that I've met, but it's the father of my vet, and he was an old farmer. And I, before, I was always thinking like, okay, you cross a stallion and a mare and all the good things will come together. That's what you think when you're younger and you're not thinking really good. And then my vet told me, you know what my father said? Listen good. For the bad things, you will have easily. They will come easily. But for the good things, you really have to do your best. And that changed completely my point of view. Because then I started thinking differently. I was not like, okay, when I put a stallion with a lot of scope on a mare who is very
careful,
that I will have a very scopey, careful horse. No, you can have the bad part of the stallion and the bad part of the mare. And before, I didn't think about that. You always think, oh, it's the positive things that come together, but it's not always the positive things. And you will easily have the bad things together, and for the good ones, you have to do your best. So in my opinion, when you have a mare that is lacking something, you should use a stallion that has this in abundance, has this a lot. But you also have to keep the good thing on your mare. So you have to choose a stallion who is as good as your mare, but what she needs, he needs to have it plenty. And some people think, okay, she's careful, she has a bad gallop, and he has a lot of scope, but he also has a bad gallop. They think, oh, we'll have a scopey, careful horse, but it can be just a bad galloping horse. That changed my point of view. And that made me think about grandfathers and grandmothers. And it's more the grandfather and the grandmother that comes back than the stallion. I don't know what you think about that, but...
Well, I agree, because even what we saw here, you pointed to different horses, and straight away when we're looking at the horse, we were not looking at its mother or father.
Yeah.
Immediately, it was a grandfather or
yeah.
something from the family,
yeah.
really strong today.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking also. So you have to know grandparents, great-grandparents, and you have to know how they are jumping. And for me, most importantly, how their character was. And that's sometimes hard to find out.
And that's actually something that, more so than a lot of, there's been a lot of different conversations
mm-hmm.
had at different shows and breeders' places on this trip. But something that has come up several times since
mm-hmm.
I got here this evening is that character
yeah.
and the mentality and
yeah.
so many of the horses that you have bred to or want to breed to, your motivation is something that they've shown you on their character.
Yeah, more than their ability to jump, I look at their character, because I think it's the most difficult thing to breed in your line,
yeah.
to bring it back in your line. And when you have a mare with a good character, you always have to use a stallion also with a good character. Don't think, okay, my mare has a good character, the stallion doesn't, but because my mare has a good character, the foal will have it. No, it's not like that. You can never, ever lose the mentality or the character. Never. Because it's the most important thing. When you look at the show, you see the horse jump. They don't jump all... They don't see the
yeah, and careful or in
careful
the same way.
And scopy. No, they all jump in a different way. But what makes a difference is that they want to do it, that they love the game, that yeah, there's something about inside of them that they really want to do the jumping. But they all jump in a different way. Have you ever seen in a horse show all the horses jumping the same?
No. Only the Kid of Bien Stallion show.
Okay. It's true. It's true. It is.
That's the only place. When you're selecting your breeding stock or deciding on which mare gets to go into the breeding program, especially, say, at 3 or up until the age of 3, if you're covering at 3, are there ways or are there particular times or things that you do to assess that mentality or that character? Like, how, I understand if it's a mare that you put into the sport yourselves and produce for a few years, you'll get a good insight into that, but I'm thinking for the person who has a 3-year-old mare that they want to breed with. What are the things that you're looking for? Or the signs that you want to see?
I think you already, well, it's big to say, but you can already see it as a foal. I don't mean you can see everything, but when you clean their stable, when you let them out, when you see them the whole day, I don't see it from somebody else's foal because I don't know them. But when you know your foal, when you see them every day, you it's not working with them, but you see them galloping, you see how they react to situations. You already see, you don't see their scope, you don't see their carefulness, but you see their character. And I think it's not always bingo, but yeah, maybe it's, yeah, I don't know, it's a feeling that you say she has something special. And it can be in a different way. It can be, some you say this one will be a careful one, or the other one, oh, she will be a scopy one, or she will always jump. Yeah, sometimes you just see it. And when you let them loose jump, I talked to you about the three-year-old, and she is always the one who says to the other ones, come on, let's go, we'll do this. I love that. I love that.
On your website, you've written your goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, our goal is to breed excellent jumping horses by combining quality broodmares from excellent mother lines with top breeding stallions. And that's
what everybody wants.
Hopes to do.
Yeah.
What does success look like to you in your breeding program? How do you assess it or define it? How do you decide then?
Now I've done a good job.
It's been a success, yeah.
When horses come into sport and they do nice things, regardless of the rider, because some come with very good riders, some come with less good riders, but when the people are happy with it, I'm very lucky. Like for Passion, he went to the Olympics. Okay, it's the Olympics, but it's kind of a luck, a horse that is going to the Olympics. And what made me the most proud is that he came there. He had three mistakes, but he came there and just he fought for his rider. His rider never did a class like this before. He never did a class like this before, but he came in and he was like, okay, let's do this. And he just went. And then there were top horses who said, oh, sorry, stop, I'm not doing this, with top riders. And for Passion, he just went in. And I know the speaker, she said, oh my God, this horse is really fighting for his rider. And my heart went like, yeah, that's my boy. Then I'm happy.
But it was special. And for Passion at the Olympic, probably the moment when I decided I wanted to come here.
Okay.
And even in the build-up for that, when he was selected and what it seemed to mean to you.
Yeah.
And then seeing him do what he did in the Olympics and the way that he did it, that was probably one of the moments where I thought,
yeah.
I want to go there and I want to learn about him.
Yeah, and you know, he was sold as a two-year-old. He was here when he was a foal, and a big stallion owner from Holland came, and I said to him, look, this one is going to be a top horse. And he said, yeah, but he's chestnut, and yeah, for pleasure he jumps a bit like this. And I said, okay, it's a for pleasure, they jump like that. And then he was sold as a two-year-old. So he wasn't sold as a foal. He was sold as a two-year-old. And I know I said to the man who bought him, look, he can jump anything. And they look at me and they're like, how do you know? But I said, I know. And he was produced. And yeah, he jumped like for pleasure. He is a for pleasure. He jumped like for pleasure. Yeah. And then he was sold, and what happened, what I think happened, he jumped a bit with the front legs, like for pleasure.
Yeah.
And I think the new, I don't know, they wanted to improve that.
Mm-hmm.
But you just have to let a horse jump like they jump and keep them happy jumping like this. He could do it, so why changing this? And then he was selected for the Olympics. And I was like, oh my God, he never did this. What is he going to do on the Olympics? And he came in and I was so proud of him, of his mentality. He has all the scope in the world, but it's his mentality what I like the most.
And I was thinking of it this morning, that nearly every show jumping breeder that you speak to or interview, if I ask them what their ultimate breeding goal is. It's to breed a horse that can go and compete at the Olympics.
Yeah.
Now that you've done that,
yeah,
what are the main goals that you'd like to tick off the list as a breeder? Is there something specific that you think, I'd love to achieve this, or I'd love to have a horse that did this or won this?
I think now, having a daughter, this would be my ultimate goal, to get her as far as possible with our own bred horses. And I would love to, if it's possible, to find for every horse, you know, the rider who fits them, who that would be, I would love to do that, but it's not always possible, because sometimes you just have to sell.
But I wonder, does the fact that you're now in a position where you can produce more of them, does that, that probably increases your chances of that happening? Because the buyer at that point in time is seeing, you know, seeing the horse further along in its education rather than a rider buying it as a foal.
Yeah, I think so. It's nowadays, I think that breeders should find a way to make money in a different way, because selling foals now is sometimes very difficult, because you have all these ICSI foals and you have all these embryo foals and ICSI foals, and sometimes it's hard for a breeder to sell at home. It's really hard. Even going to auctions when you have all these ICSI foals, it's really hard. So you have to find a new way of making money. And I'm in the position that I have a daughter who loves riding. So I think I can try to do it that way. I think I always wanted to do it that way, but it's not always easy, because I'm a normal breeder, I'm not a rich person, so it's not easy to pay every month a rider to ride a horse. I mean, you can pay a house off of it. Sometimes it's crazy that you spend all this money. One day I had somebody who wanted to buy a foal, and he said, yeah, what did the mother do? I said, okay, she breeds herself. Yes, but why did you do embryo? I said, okay, but not everybody can do embryo, or everybody wants to do embryo. Not everybody has the luck to be able to pay for 10 mares to be ridden. I cannot do that. So my daughter will have to do it.
Something that is interesting, and I don't know if it's conscious or unconscious, but, and I don't know, is this in just horses or is it other aspects of life, but you definitely don't seem to follow the crowd.
No.
Whether it's with embryos, ICSI, buying straws, even down to your stallion selection, and it seems like this is something from very early on.
Yeah.
And not just in terms of what you won't do, but in terms of your willingness to use horses that the world is overlooking at a time or doesn't think is good enough. And from what I can see, is it's paying off. Like, when I think back and reading up on your lines and things like that, now when you see the names and the pedigrees, those horses, it's like, oh yeah, well, they're top horses, they're proven. But Quick Star, when nobody would use them, Mr. Blue, when nobody would use them, and probably For Pleasure, when nobody would use them. And some of your probably greatest successes then have been as a result of those decisions. What I'm wondering, what does your What's your stallion selection process like when you're picking stallions for your breeding program or your mares? And then I want to know, who do you see as your new quick star, Mr. Blue for pleasure, the horses that you think the world is missing?
So the most important thing for me is the character. When I saw Quickstar jumping, I was a little devil. He was such a small horse. He was, I think, 156. He jumped like he was 175. He was like, yes, I'm going to do this. And I love that. It's his heart that I love. And I know his mother was really good too. So it was important to me. For pleasure, he jumped in his own way, but he jumped incredible. I think with two different riders. Mm-hmm. So I said, this horse must have a good mentality, otherwise you don't do it. So I used him in a time that nobody wanted the chestnut or nobody wanted a horse with longer legs. Yeah. Mr. Blue, the same. I don't know why. When you look into a horse's eyes, you can see that determination. Same with Harley. Balubert, the same. He was an ugly gelding. It is. He was in his stable. I was at Pessoas. He was in his stable and he said, here's Balubert. And I was like, oh my God, he's an ugly gelding. But his character... He really wanted to do it. So I used Balubert. And I think I have some stallions that I think will become very good horses. One of them is Hermitage. But I think everybody can see that.
Especially after last week.
Yeah. I think everybody can see that. And one, maybe you don't know him, is Jazzy de Dam.
You'll have to repeat that one for me.
Jazzy de Dam?
No.
You have to take a look at him. He's quite of a firm horse, but he jumps so light. I love him. I love him. He's Emerald... I think Emerald Calvaro Canan. So all the heavy things together, but he jumps not like them. He's light. One of the young stallions, I like Untouched LB. You will not know him.
I think I watched him jumping in Centaur in February.
Maybe. He's by United Touch, mm-hmm. then Cornet. And one of the young stallions that I wanted to use this year, I think he's 5, is Stromboli de Mesiter.
One more time.
Stromboli de Mesiter. You have to take a look at him too and tell me what you think.
And I'm also going to have to get you to write these down.
Yeah.
And what is it about him that you like?
The easiness that he jumps. He jumps so... easy. And what I like the most, I talked with his owner and he said he's very, very easy. Very easy to ride, very willing to work. So also his mentality. I like it.
From what you've mentioned in this conversation and in our chat over dinner, was... You seem to have taken good opportunities to get to speak to the people close to the horses that were interested in you.
Yeah.
And I'm actually pleasantly surprised because you seem like a quieter person.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are reluctant to approach people like that. But you've done it and you seem to have gotten some really good information. Is there one person in the equestrian world that you would love an opportunity to sit down with for an evening, have dinner with, have a coffee with, and pick their brains?
It's not a breeder.
That's okay.
It's Tristan Tucker. He's dressage rider.
Okay.
But he, I don't know how you say it in English. He's not like a horse whisperer. It's not like that. But he has a method to learn horses how to be confident with themselves. And I think this can change a lot in your way of dealing with horses, in the way of handling horses. And I would love to know more about it and how he thinks, and I think it will make me think more how you handle horses. And that's what I love. I want to learn as much as possible. I'm a very determined person, very stubborn also. And I have my own way of thinking, but I prefer that than just doing what everybody does. It always has been like this.
I think sometimes that's the interesting thing, though. When you choose a life as a breeder, you also have the choice to do things your own way.
Yeah.
And live or die by...
Yeah.
Those decisions. It's not like going working for a company that you have to do things in a particular way. And it's really nice and it's really refreshing to see you doing things your own way. Because I think a lot of the time breeders are afraid to do that.
But that's what I am. I'm in everything. I'm like this. And I always listen to everybody. And then I think, okay, what can this mean to me? Is it true? And then I start thinking. Because when you have 20 boxes to muck, you have a lot of time to think. And then I start thinking, and I'm thinking about everything. And I just want to become better and better in not only in breeding, but only in also in handling horses and making them happy and keeping them healthy. I want to know. I would love to know everything, but I think you're old when you know everything. You won't know everything, but you have to try to learn as much as possible, and you have to make up your own mind and use your common sense. And some things are just logical. Sometimes people make decisions that I think, but what on earth are you doing now? Just think a bit. And then, yeah.
If you could change one thing about your breeding program, if you had a magic wand, is there one element of that, or one big change that you'd love to be in a position to make that you think would just really move things in the direction that you wanted to go in?
Thing that I want to change?
Yeah. Or is there a part that you struggle with?
Yeah. The part now is that I've always wanted to do that. That's to keep my horses, not to sell them as a foal, but to keep them. And being able to produce them myself. Me riding, but I mean to find a good rider to... Now my daughter, to give her all the chances, but I also want to work together with riders that I think that are good for, that match the horse. And you just need a lot of money for that. And that's sometimes what I'm struggling with, because I want that so bad. But it's a big investment, again. It's always big investments. And sometimes you think, now we're close to everything that I want. And then they're like, we just need a new ring, we need a new truck. And it's all important. Everything is important. I think that's what I'm struggling the most with.
And thinking similarly in a big picture way, Are there concerns that you have for the industry as a whole that you would change if you could?
Yes, right away.
Okay.
For me, I think that they all go too fast with the horses. For me, a four-year-old shouldn't be allowed to go on a show. It should be allowed to do training shows. But when something goes wrong, you can just come back, try the combination again, and then the horses learn something from it. And then people maybe will start as a four-year-old and not as a three-year-old, and then they go on a competition when they're four. But to be able to do a competition at four, you need to ride them at three, already jumping at three. I think there's too much pressure on the horses. So I would change it. For me, four-year-olds, they should be in training shows and be ridden at home very well in dressage. Five-year-old could go on a show, but not that high, just lower, that they have confidence, that they feel happy with themselves. And then they have the time to mature, and when they're strong enough, they can jump the bigger classes, no problem. I would change the way of selecting stallions, same thing. It's too young. I would wait one more year. What I think is also very important is to give more education to young riders. Also on good people who are unfortunate to be born in a rich family, but also good riders, young riders, good riders, to give them the opportunity to
progress.
To progress, have lessons, that they are helped. What would I choose? No more ICSI. Yeah.
Why?
I don't believe in this process. I mean, everybody has to do what they have to do. And it's very tempting because you can have a lot of falls but it's not natural, not at all. I always say you can help nature a little bit, but you cannot fuck with nature. And that's what's happening now. You know, when nature relies on a mare, on a woman, they have one egg every month. A man or a stallion has every day millions of, how you say it?
Sperm.
And what they are doing now, it already started with artificial insemination. They cut it in, I don't know how many pieces they make from one.
Ejaculate.
Yeah. So one of these, maybe when they divide it in 10, one of these 10, they have the best sperm. The other is already less. But you always have there are always millions of sperms. Now they take just one sperm thing and they eject it in eggs from the same time. Normally there's one egg every month. And now they take 10 eggs, one sperm. I think that's not helping nature, that's just fucking nature. I don't believe in that. I really don't. And I think it's not fair to your mares. Your mares, all these good mares, they have given their lives, they have given everything for you in sport or all these good mares, they have given everything in sport. What is their reward? Being, how you say it, with a long needle,
yeah,
they injected. Go. Yeah, that's not. They deserve more. They deserve being a mother themselves. I don't know. I don't know a lot of mares who don't like to be a mother. I think it's. These horses would be, you should give them a better life than only that they have to be used as an egg donor. I had my older mare, she needed to put down, and I only have 2 foals of her, of Winnie. And it was tempting, and I called the clinic and I said, is there a possibility to save her eggs? And they said, yes, then we take out the ovaries, we give her a lot of sedation, take out the ovaries, and then we put her down. And I was like, no, she's not deserving that. She gave everything of her for us. Because if they can choose, they just be in the field. But they gave everything in sport for you. They loved it. And then they deserve a better life. And then just be seen as an egg donor. I don't want that. No. You have to love your horses. Not seeing them as a money maker. It's nice when you have money of it. It's nice. It has to be. But they deserve more. That's my opinion.
That leads me on nicely to the question that I end each interview with. So this is the only question that you will have had the opportunity to know of in advance, I guess, from hearing some of the other ones. But what advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone at the start of their breeding career?
Use your common sense and think. Think and make up your own mind. Don't just do what everybody does, but think and pick out the good things that everybody is telling you, but think for yourself. It's think for yourself and love your horses. The love for the horses has to come first, and not the money. We need money. Everybody needs the money to continue their breeding program. It's stupid to say maybe they're smarter than me. They have more money, the ICSI breeders. But yeah, I couldn't do it. And if you are a young breeder, find a good mare and don't have too many. And try to do it in a good way. And don't judge your horses too soon. Don't do that. It's impossible. Not every horse jumps in a very classical, good way. Look at their heart, look at their mentality, and they're not showing it always, but you feel it. You can feel it when they have something special. And it's not because they have... You know, True Star, she was an ugly foal. She was, but she was so special from in the beginning. You know, from when she was a little foal till her dad, she screamed at me every day. When she saw me 5 times, you go to the stable and you see you 10 times a day, she was always screaming. And I was like, you are something special. And it was. She was something special. As a young breeder, you have to have a connection with your horses. Breeding is a passion. You need to do it out of love. I think. That's maybe why I'm so stubborn in things. I don't know. Yeah. And don't always think that because the mare has a good line behind it, that it's a good mare. No. You have to look at the horse. And it always starts somewhere. Can start a whole line, can start with one horse. They always say, yeah, but The stallion needs to have a good mother line, and the grandmother must have produced, and the mother must have produced, and you must, yeah, that's nice when it happened, when it's like this. But you know, Usha, everybody loves Usha. She produced so many good lines, but it started with Usha. That's important. It always starts somewhere. Don't think that it's not because the line hasn't produced yet that it cannot be a good line. And think, yeah, use your common sense. Think about stallions. Think about it. Don't, not only because you like them jumping, that it fits your mare. Just think about it. And don't do what everybody else does.
If you enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, why not send it to a friend or share it on your social media?